Garden Talk and the Good Food Hour are brought to you by the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. Good morning, Chef John Ash.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing very, very well. Now, since I'm in the month of March, well, barely in the month of March, I'm eating better. And why?
Why?
Because March is National Nutrition Month.
Oh.
And every year for the last 35 years or so, we have celebrated National Nutrition Month either by giving our listeners a quiz or talking to one of the very smart, gifted dietitians and nutritionists around the country. And today, we're pleased to welcome Dr. Caitlin Dow, who's a research scientist from the Nutrition Action Newsletter, something that we've been subscribers to for probably 20 plus years. That's part of the science, a part of the Center for Science in the Public Interest in Washington, D.C. And she's joining us today to debunk some of the common health food myths and vitamin supplement myths and tell us what's looking on the horizon as far as cutting edge nutritional research. Caitlin, thanks for joining John and me today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
How long have you been with the center?
I've been there for almost 6 years now.
And what's your background?
So I have a PhD in nutrition science, and then I did some continuing research after that in cardiovascular disease. So, and then my undergrad was in exercise science, so kind of hitting at health from a few different angles.
Well, we love the Action Newsletter, especially Nutrition Action does, because it gives us cutting-edge news, but it also doesn't make me feel guilty.
That's great. I love to hear that.
Yeah. The other thing that it does is it debunks a lot of the myths about nutrition and that kind of stuff, which we really appreciate. And can we talk about some of those?
Yes, absolutely. Let's get into it.
Well, these are from the newsletters. The first one we wanted to tackle was restaurant menu items face-off. What was the point of that article?
Yeah, so, you know, when you go out to eat, it's hard to decide what's your best option. And so we took a few different categories and pitted two common options against each other to help you think through what the best option is. And then you can sort of apply those conclusions to other foods when you go out to eat.
So give us some examples from that article.
Yeah, so, you know, one common example is when you go out to eat for lunch, maybe you're offered a pick two, a soup, salad, and a sandwich. So which two do you pick? Salad's a little bit of a no-brainer there. Of course, you have to be careful about some of the additions like croutons and dressing, but salad's usually your best option. And then for your second option, it's a little trickier, but a half sandwich is usually the winner here. That's because soups are often so high in salt. And sandwiches also pack in more protein than most soups. So when in doubt, a sandwich is usually your best option, but try to stay away from red meats, processed meats, and a lot of cheese.
So one of the things that we hear a lot about, and I think you've talked about it in the magazine, is do we get too much protein?
So, in general, most Americans get too much protein, or I should say get enough protein. You don't necessarily need to focus on getting more protein, but when it's an option of protein versus a refined grain or saturated fat, go for protein.
What's another restaurant menu item face-off that we face?
Yeah, so one of my favorites to think about is when you go out for Thai food. So do you do noodles or do you do stir fry?
Stir fry.
Yeah. Noodles.
Okay, all right. So one of you picked a healthier choice, and that would be the stir-fried veggies, generally with a protein like chicken, seafood, or tofu. If you really love noodles, so the problem with the noodles is that they're usually a refined grain, either a flour or a refined rice, so white rice. But if you really love noodles, which I'm in that camp, we recommend getting a side of steamed or stir-fried veggies to mix in just to lighten the noodles a bit.
Okay. I think most people would guess correctly, maybe for the next one, taco or burrito?
Yeah, I think most people would get this one right, too. But tacos are definitely the winner here. And that's because a flour tortilla, like at Chipotle, can pack in around 300 calories. Yeah. So it's a lot of extra calories.
Just in the tortilla?
Just in the tortilla.
Whoa.
Yes. So one other option is that you could lose the tortilla entirely and do a bowl instead, mm-hmm. to do a burrito bowl. And then, you know, no matter what you choose, if you're given the option of cheese and sour cream, pick one or the other, but not both, just to slash the saturated fat.
Let's move on to the next article. What's hot in the soup aisle? What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so, you know, the soup, the packaged soup or canned soups have really improved over the years, but the thing to look out for is sodium content. That's really where they fall short, or I should say land high. they typically have a lot of sodium. Saturated fat can also be an issue in creamy soups, but there are now soups like Pacific Foods Garden Tomato that are made with oat milk instead of cream. So they're really improving the options out there.
Okay, but most of the soups, that the canned ones, have, as you mentioned, partly refined white flour, a lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of them have refined white flour. That's pretty hard to get away from if you're picking something that has either, you know, some kind of grain in it. There are some options out there that have wild rice or brown rice added. But, you know, I generally kind of stay away from those and go for things that are packed with veggies and beans and lentils.
And it's easy enough to make your own, isn't it? Soup's one of the most forgiving things you can do in the kitchen.
It really is.
And it's much cheaper to make your own.
It's far cheaper. You can freeze the leftovers. Yeah. And we have a ton of recipes for soups on our website. Designed by our healthy cook, Kate Sherwood.
What to know about the new GMO disclosures? This was a massive article. Can we cut to the quick and go to the bottom line, what this article discovered?
Yeah, so the bottom line is that this new disclosure law for bioengineered foods is not terribly helpful for consumers. This new law that requires that a food that contains DNA from a genetically modified organism has to say so, either in words or on a symbol, on the label. But the challenge of it is that you won't see the word GMO. What you'll see is something like bioengineered or contains bioengineered food ingredients. And you might not actually see the actual disclosure. They might just give a phone number or a website or a QR code that will take you to the disclosure.
So can I ask you a question about that? One of the, because there's another point of view, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, that says that genetically modified is not necessarily a bad thing. And they point to things like the GMO rice, that is, you know, has more vitamins and minerals and I don't know what else in it, which has been a real improvement since so much of the world depends upon rice. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing to keep in mind about genetically modified or bioengineered foods is that they are safe for health. So that's not necessarily the reason that many people want to avoid them, but we do believe that consumers have the right to know that they are in foods. And so there's a lot of opportunity with bioengineered foods, but I think the big thing to keep in mind is that it's really on a case-by-case basis whether a bioengineered food is beneficial or not. I don't think that they should all be lumped together as all good or all bad.
Yeah. Onward we go to the one issue that's very near to my heart, and that is multiple choice, how to find the best multivitamin. I'm constantly assaulted with advertising that I'm deficient in fill in the blank.
Yeah.
What's the bottom line on multivitamins?
Or that if you take a multivitamin, you're going to be taller, stronger, younger, all of that.
Yeah. So the truth falls somewhere in the middle of that. The real thing is that not everyone needs to take a multivitamin, but they probably make sense for many older adults. And that's because people eat fewer calories as they age, so vitamin and mineral intake can go down. And the other thing is that many older adults can't absorb vitamin B12 from foods, so a multivitamin can help with that.
But you should have your labs done. Shouldn't you also have your physician just do a blood draw and see if you are deficient in any of these areas?
Yeah, absolutely. So so what they can do is what multivitamins can do is really provide a bit of protection from deficiencies. So they generally don't hurt, but they may not help that much. And they are no substitute for a good diet. And also, you don't have to get fancy with them. A really basic multivitamin from the main big companies or a generic is really all you need. Don't look for herbals. Don't look for botanicals. There's no proof that those things benefit us.
Well, it's kind of overwhelming when you go into the market and try to decide, well, I'm going to take a multivitamin. There's so many brands and so many variations on the theme. How do you know what to buy?
Yeah. Well, that's why you should get the March 1st the issue of the Science Public Interest, because you spell out and give recommendations for the best choices of vitamins.
Yes, absolutely. So we have a whole list in there. We also tell you what to look for in a multivitamin. So I recommend going to our website, cspinet.org, to find that chart, because it also varies based off of life stage and gender. So there's not necessarily blanket recommendations for everybody.
I love the chart that what your multi should contain. Yeah. That's a terrific, terrific inclusion.
So is there a difference? I guess there is, between men and women, because they do, you know, often vitamins are modifier is this is a man's vitamin, this is a woman's vitamin.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is overstated. There are some small differences that our chart really lays out, but by and large, you can, you know, if you want to buy one bottle and use it for you and your spouse, that's usually fine to do.
Yes, yeah.
And let's close up with an article that you wrote, Dr. Dow, and that is a look at the evidence for stress and anxiety supplements. I don't know about you, but I've noticed an increase in world anxiety and tension the past couple of weeks on the political front. Yeah. We're still fighting COVID. Yeah. And I think people will just go, God, I got to get something to mellow me out. And they're grabbing all kinds of weird roots and tonics. And what did your research reveal?
Well, I think a lot of people will be disappointed to hear, but The bottom line is that there's really no good evidence that any of these work.
What about CBD?
Yeah.
CBD, that's everybody's favorite. Yeah, the research has just not really panned out on CBD. And, you know, a lot of them have been tested in these short-term trials and might show that situational anxiety, so something like public speaking that stresses many people out, that can drop with some of these supplements. But when they're tested in long-term trials for daily anxiety and stress, they really just don't pan out.
Okay. Save your money, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Exercise and meditate.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some really good evidence for meditation and for therapy. So
what's the best way for us to access the newsletter?
So we just launched a new website. So cspinet.org has been completely revamped, and you can subscribe to the newsletter there. And, you know, there's a lot of features on there. We have years worth of content available. And also all of our recipes are now in a database that is searchable. So if you want something with lentils, you can search for it and find all of our great recipes there.
Fabulous. The Nutrition Action Health Newsletter, published by the Center for Science in the Public Interest. Thank you, Dr. Caitlin Dow, for joining us. This has been most illuminating.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, and happy March National Nutrition Month to you.
Thank you. You as well.
Take care. Bye-bye. back after this. And I didn't know this, but I just learned, and I think you just learned, that tomorrow is National Ravioli Day.
Yeah.
And of course, I knew Chef John Ash, he's probably got some dynamite ravioli recipes, and you did, and you sent them to me, and we'll talk about them right after this.
I'm Steve Kerr.
I'm Stephen Curry.
I'm Jonathan Kuminga.
I'm Kevon Looney.
Hey, I'm James Wiseman.
I'm Damian Lee.
I'm Andre Iguodala, and you're listening to KSRO, the North Bay headquarters of Dub Nation.
Reed's Trailer Sales in Petaluma is buying or consigning travel trailers, fifth wheels, and motorhomes. Reed's will pay you top dollar or consign your RV for you. Reed's Trailer Sales has a 2,000 square foot parts department, a full service sales department, and a full-time finance department to support your consignment sale. And we will handle all bank and DMV paperwork. Reed's Trailer Sales is locally owned since 1990 at the same 6-acre location in Petaluma. Reed's Trailer Sales staff of 25 local Sonoma County residents are here and ready to serve you, following all health and safety protocols. If you're looking for a new or used travel trailer, fifth wheel, motorhome, or utility trailer, Reed's Trailer Sales has hundreds of models to choose from. Reed's Trailer Sales in Petaluma.
Reed's, you should buy your trailer at Reed's. A fifth wheel travel trailer or utility, you should buy your trailer at Reed's.
Reed's Trailer Sales.
Join Community Action Partnership of Sonoma County for Community Conversations on Race. Transparent, vulnerable, and often uncomfortable discussions that aim to unite us in our differences and experiences. Recognizing that Sonoma County has its own challenges in race relations, Community Action Partnership Sonoma began a virtual series over a year ago on Facebook Live with an overwhelmingly positive response and a desire to reach even more Sonoma County and North Bay residents. CAP Sonoma brings these important conversations to KSRO twice a month on Thursdays from 12 to 12:30. With a variety of topics and guests, we'll share stories, truths, and ways to heal as a community. From Native American communities to Asian, Black, youth, and gender issues to how the arts are affected, all will be discussed in an honest and approachable format. Listen to podcasts of the shows on your own schedule at KSRO.com under Ask the Expert. Catch Community Conversations on Race, brought to you by a grant from the Community Foundation of Sonoma County, twice a month on Thursdays, noon to 12:30, right here on KSRO.
This is Larry Flick, owner of The Floor Store. This month marks our 33rd anniversary. You're only 33 once, and a once-in-a-lifetime anniversary deserves a one-of-a-kind sale. So from now to March 28th, everything in the store is 33% off. Everything. Designer carpet, exotic hardwood, imported tile and stone, waterproof flooring, or anything else. That's 33% off everything. We suggest you get here early. Go to floorstores.com to find us on Santa Rosa Avenue, one block south of Smart and Final. The Floor Store. Bay Area Flooring Authority.
Understanding the benefits of growth, Poppy Bank proudly offers commercial and small business lending in order to nurture local businesses. Poppy Bank offers competitive rates and can tailor a package of products and services to exceed your business needs. Poppy Bank is dedicated to supporting the business and economic prosperity in the communities they serve. How can they help your business blossom? Contact them today at poppy.bank. Member FDIC.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Every year when the spring rolls around, my lonely heart falls to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad I'm not a little girl like you. Spring fever, in love with you. You flap the tongue of him, you make me feel. I look at you and the love for me. And when I'm not a little girl like you, I'm around spring fever in love with you.
Well, I played that because, of course, it's spring and just a few hours from now.
It doesn't have anything to do with ravioli.
No, it doesn't. Not a daggone thing. I couldn't find a spring as ravioli time. But that's Little Willie John from late 1950s or so. Spring Fever. Yeah. It got a hold on me. Pretty good song,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So you sent me wonderful ravioli recipes that celebrate spring. Would you talk about the first one, the asparagus one?
Yeah, well, it uses asparagus, which is sort of the harbinger of spring, I think. You know, the if you live out in the country, it's the first thing you can harvest and all of that. And it's pretty straightforward. You know, I don't have that recipe in front of me, but is that the one that I used? what did I? Oh, I used wonton wrappers for this.
Oh, that's
which
so
is,
cool.
Which is, instead of rolling out your own pasta, and I do that often because if you don't have time or don't wanna or don't have a pasta machine or something like that, the wonton skins are really great and they're easy to put together and fast and all of that. And this one has a brown butter sauce, which is one of the classic accompaniments to almost anything. And brown butter just means that you take the butter and over moderate heat, cook it, and the milk solids in the butter begin to brown and get toasty and nutty. And it takes butter to a whole different phase. So this includes our brown butter sauce.
And it's easy to put together.
The
asparagus, creme fraiche, a little ricotta, parmesan, a little anchovy paste. That's nice.
Yeah.
And use these wonton wrappers.
Yeah.
And you don't feel like you're cheating.
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
I don't want
all.
To be feeling that. And you said they're really good.
They're fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. The next recipe is a soft
There's
egg.
A picture of one there.
And it's beautiful. Here's let me hold it up to the mic.
Yeah.
It's really gorgeous. The next one is a soft egg ravioli. Is that a classic ravioli?
It is. I'm not sure where it comes from, but what you end up doing, this one I use a regular pasta. And the interesting thing is you can buy, if you don't want to make it yourself, you can buy pasta sheets that are already made. The problem with this, they're kind of expensive, and it's so cheap to make your own pasta. And once you do it, and you don't need a pasta machine to
you
make
don't?
Your own. No, you can use a rolling pin. That's what all the old
Nonas,
Nonas did, the Italian grandmothers still do that. So this is pretty interesting. And what you do with it after rolling it out and all of the getting it all ready is you put an egg yolk in the center and then cut around it to form the ravioli and then gently press it together. And then when you cook it, especially with fresh made dough, it cooks very quickly. Only takes a few minutes, 3 or 4 minutes to cook. The egg inside is still runny. So that when you cut into the ravioli, it's just a treat.
It sounds decadent. I've never had that before.
Haven't you? But
now you've inspired me.
Yeah.
Both of these recipes are on the KSR website. John Ash's asparagus ravioli with brown butter sauce and his soft egg ravioli. When we return, we're going to the great Northwest and talk seafood with a great author and seafood lover, Cynthia Nims. That's coming up next.
KSRO News Updates are brought to you by Platinum Chevrolet in Santa Rosa. Find new roads at Platinum Chevrolet, committed to live and local news updates here in Sonoma County.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's fun to shop healthy. Your food is fresh and provided by local farmers and ranchers. These farmers offer the freshest local produce and select beef, pork, seafood, and freshly made sausages. A variety of cheese, eggs, and dairy are all at the market. March brings fresh salad greens, strawberries, avocados, and plant starts. Visit the Italian Corner for fresh pasta, gnocchi, and sauces. Shop the market's creative local artisans. There's fresh-made pastries, including gluten-free and breads that are still warm. Enjoy coffee, breakfast, or lunch from the market's variety of prepared food. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, winner of the Press Democrat's Best of Award. Open Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 p.m. at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
This is George Adair with Cross Country Mortgage. If you're in the market to buy a home, this message is for you. My team and I are experts at providing hands-on assistance to getting your home financing done fast and with confidence. Folks, I've been helping people obtain the right financing for nearly 2 decades. This experience has helped hundreds of homeowners get through some challenging situations. Maybe you're a property investor, or how about a first-time home buyer? Divorces are very complicated, and you need my experience to understand what your mortgage options are. Inherited property or rent-to-own agreements are also my specialty. Financing a home is a huge transaction in your life. When combined with a challenging situation, you need the advice and confidence to do it right. If you're ready for a great lending experience, call 707-583-8100. That's 707-583-8100. Or visit georgiadair.com. That's georgiadair.com.
Cross Country Mortgage, NMLS 3029, and George Adair, NMLS 245370. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Equal housing opportunity, subject to credit approval.
Stressed? Depressed? Need a rest?
Or maybe you just need a really good deal. If it's been a while since you visited mySonomaDeals.com, you are missing out. We add new deals regularly, and many of the best deals sell out within days or even hours. Purchase your deals today before they're gone tomorrow at mySonomaDeals.com, and be sure to sign up for email or text alerts so you never miss a deal. That's mySonomaDeals.com.
We had the pleasure of talking with Cynthia Nims. Gosh, it's been about 6 years ago, for her book Oysters.
Yes.
And Cynthia is not a stranger to Sonoma County. She actually attended a couple of the old Fetzer Vineyards culinary classes you did back in the 1990s. And she's well respected as knowing an awful lot about seafood. She's written 12 cookbooks, and her new one just came out. It's called Shellfish, 50 Seafood Recipes for Shrimp, Crab, Mussels, Clams, Oysters, Scallops, and Lobsters. I don't think she missed a shellfish on this.
No.
And she's speaking to us this morning from beautiful Seattle. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello. Beautiful, slightly cloudy Seattle. And it's perfect for a Saturday.
Yeah. Well, that's same thing here.
So after we get done with the book, I want you to give me a couple recommendations for when I visit Seattle. What's the best seafood restaurants? Mm. Currently.
Oh, goodness.
Would you okay. Just think about that in the background.
Mm. All right, sure.
Well, because you have a relative, a close relative who lives in Seattle.
And so I'll be visiting my close relative brother. Oh, good. So I want to, I know it's selfish for me to spend valuable airtime, but I think listeners, there's a lot of service between Santa Rosa and Seattle, people flying up and back. So I think a lot of listeners would benefit from Cynthia's expertise. And she's a native, and she's a native Northwesterner, so she knows her seafood. So the, of course, the title explains that you've tackled everything under the shellfish world in this book.
Well, that can be done in the, you know, the page count I had. There certainly are other, there's so many, there are a lot of really great seafood resources that are, you know, already published and yet to be published. Some are more encyclopedic, you know, I'll be honest, than this one. My book, as my last couple, Oysters and Crab, you know, they're meant to be very approachable, you know, enough information certainly to give people confidence shopping for, storing, using these different shellfish in this case, but not, you know, as deep a dive as they might get in some other books. So I'm hitting sort of a happy medium for home cooks who want to learn a little bit more, gain a little confidence, find a few new recipe ideas.
Can I say something to you? You write so beautifully. And just to echo what you said, I found, you know, there's a very wonderful simplicity to the recipes. And you say, actually, in the introduction, that talking about how people are often intimidated by cooking seafood, even cooking and cooking shellfish. And you say, the less you do, the better.
And I'm sure you can relate to that too,
yes,
right?
I can.
As a chef, In fact, we may get into this in a little bit, but I, you know, as Steve mentioned, I had been down in the Sonoma Napa area when I was an editor at Simply Seafood magazine back in the '90s, and I just reread some of what you had contributed because you were at Fetzer at the time, and you said exactly the same thing. You know, one of the bigger mistakes folks make when cooking seafood is embellishing a little too much. You know, there's so many great flavor combinations out there, and I don't want to suggest that, you know, you shouldn't use more than lemon and parsley or chives or whatever, but there's a lot of really phenomenal ways to be adventurous and creative with seafood. But I think the seafood itself benefits, and you get more of its character when you hold back a teeny bit and maybe don't go all in. Not that you have to do that every single time, but when the more pristine and unique and, you know, luscious, seasonal, perhaps, the piece of seafood is, you know, pulling back and just lightly steaming, throw it on the grill, throw it under the broiler, it's going to be really exquisite.
Yeah. So diving into some of the other things that you talk about, what about freezing? You know, that whole idea that seafood's only good when it's fresh.
Yes. Oh, I think that's such an interesting thing. And I, you know, yeah, I think fresh, as I said in the book, really depends on the context in which the term's being used. Fresh can mean, you know, X number of hours out of the water, you know, caught that day or the day before or whatever. It can be that kind of a how long out of the water context. It can be never frozen, which is often, I think, a general, you know, way that the term's used. It's either fresh or it has been frozen, but that doesn't necessarily mean fresh as any particular time frame, right? It could mm-hmm. be fresh 3 or 4 days later in that context, or fresh the way, you know, I like to think of it when you say I'm serving you a piece of fresh fish or a piece of, you know, some oysters that are fresh or whatever it is. It's just that they are in their pristine state and they're going to be, you know, at their best, which can be in many cases a frozen product. And I mm-hmm. remember saying this again, going back a couple decades to Simply Seafood. I remember we were often reminding readers to not shy away from the frozen options out of just habit or just assumption that means it's a lesser product, because often those frozen products are, you know, in just frozen so quickly after harvest and transported, you know, in a deep frozen state, and then by the time we get them and thaw them out carefully and use them, they're still in a very mm-hmm. very high quality state that is going to be delicious.
And you made the point in the book that commercial operations who freeze things freeze at such a low temperature, you know, much lower than you could ever do in your home freezer. So you're talking about commercially frozen, not home frozen. Yeah.
Yes, I do make that point because, gosh, you know, and I do think it can be okay, certainly, to freeze seafood at home, particularly if you have a, you know, a separate chest freezer or whatever, mm-hmm. where it's you're not opening it a couple times a day to get ice and ice cream, and maybe it can attain a lower temp. But I think in that case, you do not want to, you know, freeze it for too long. The quality of the product isn't going to be quite as good as it would be if it had been frozen at the much lower temps. Some folks have great, you know, you know, freezing them in a like a vacuum pack uh-huh. can help a little bit. And, you know, there's some ways that home freezing certainly can be a quality way to store. But I rarely do that myself unless I just happen to have a whole slew of some lovely crab that I really mm-hmm. can't get through and I want to freeze. So, it's an option.
So would you talk about shellfish tags? What does that mean?
Well, sure. I think, I just included that so folks have a sense that there's, you know, there's a lot of talk about traceability, you know, lately. And it's not something often that the consumer is going to see or, you know, have, you know, a direct visibility to. But it's a tag created at the point of either harvest or not, well, at the point of where it's processed and packaged up to go out to retail or food service. And so this tag follows the shellfish from the processor or farm or wherever it came from. And I do, like, if I buy 5 or 10 pounds of a shellfish from a local farm and it gets shipped to me, often it will have that tag with it because, again, it's meant to follow it. And it's just a chance, like sometimes at the market, if, you know, there's some oysters on display, you know, the tag is available to confirm, like, hey, what part of the state did this come from? Or it's really just a trace of, you know, the source.
And you can ask the merchant, the person selling you this, to show you the tag if you want.
Yeah, I think if you want to. I'm not sure how often folks do that. Is that something you've done, John, yourself?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, it gives you, like I said, sometimes if the person's, like, you know, they know it's from South Puget Sound, but you can confirm the bay it came from or something like that. So it can be as much a tool for just sort of knowing a specific spot that, yeah. that it was harvested. Yeah. And it just helps with, again, sort of that tracing and following mm-hmm. it back to the source.
Also in the shellfish basics category, I noticed that I'm thinking that you have a bumper sticker on your car, Cynthia. It's not Save the Whales.
I have a couple. I'm not sure which one you're
Well, talking about. I know it's not Save the Whales, but I thought you would have a bumper sticker, Save Your Shells.
Oh, Save Your Shells. Maybe I should make that into a bumper sticker.
A what?
There you go. Yes, in fact, last night I made, Save Your Shells. So when you are enjoying like a whole crab, bull lobster, and shrimp are the particular shells that I think are the most, delicious for these options. Saving them to make stock. Basically, they make really delicious stock. And when I say save, it's generally that you may not have, like if you have one crab that you have picked the meat from for one meal, that, you know, that won't make a very big batch of stock. So what I tend to do is take those shells, put them in a freezer bag, and then accumulate other shells added to the freezer bag. And then you've got a little bit more volume and you can make a slightly larger batch of stock, which is exactly what I did yesterday. I had one Dungeness crab worth of shells in the freezer, and the shrimp I sometimes get have those little tail bits of the shell still on. So I mean, even though they're like little handfuls at a time, it's all flavor, right? And I put them in that freezer bag along with the tops of leek green tops when I'm trimming leeks. And then I just made this batch of stock. And in the case of yesterday, I reduced it down quite a lot after I strained it and made it was for a pan sauce for some seared scallops.
We're going to take a break for just a couple of minutes, Cynthia. Cynthia is the author of the new book, Shellfish, 50 Seafood Recipes for Shrimp, Crab, Mussels, Clams, Oysters, Scallops, and Lobsters. And when we come back from this break, we're going to dive right in. See, I wanted to use a water verb,
no.
John. So don't.
You're so.
I know. So I had a lot of coffee this morning. So Cynthia, don't go away. We'll be right back.
KSRO is online at KSRO.com. Streaming powered by Hudson Street Design, a Healdsburg Lumber company.
Most 90-year-old things are not at their peak performance. But at Ongaro & Sons, at 90 years, we are just getting started. It all began in 1932. Ernest V. Ongaro founded Ongaro Plumbing. In 1940, heating and cooling repair and installation were added, as were sons Donald, Ernest, and Richard. Since then, Ongaro & Sons added electrical and many family members throughout the years. Don't worry, there won't be a test later. The takeaway is, Ongaro & Sons is one of the most respected, trusted, and well-established heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical companies in Northern California. We value integrity, service, and quality. We know our employees create the lasting impression our clients remember. We hire and train only the best tradespeople. All our work is guaranteed. No risk, no confusion, no regrets. We perform exactly what is needed to be done at the price we quote. Go to OngaroAndSons.com for more information and the phone number. And thank you, Sonoma County, for believing in us for 90 years. Ongaro & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical, too. One call does it all.
Trusted service, no need to lie. Hop online, our reviews are high at Big O. At Big O Tires.
Come into Big O today and save up to $100 instantly on select in-stock sets of Cooper, Nitto, and Pirelli brand tires. Big O Tires, the team you trust. Installation charges extra, required on all four tires. Disposal fees extra and up to 10% shop fee based on non-discounted regular retail price not to exceed $35 where permitted. Not valid with other offers. Valid at participating locations. Expires 3/27/2022.
Pizza and strudel and schnitzel with noodles. These are a few of our favorite things, along with a nice list of German beers and wines. Franchetti's Gasthaus in Santa Rosa invites you to try their legendary Schweinshaxe, the quintessential dish of the Bavarian beer halls, and many more traditional uber good foods. Enjoy wood-fired pizzas, also known as Flammkuchen, and beer in Liedersteins. See you in the beer garden. Open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 8. Sunday brunch from 10 to 2. Patio and indoor dining, delivery and takeout.
Healdsburg Lumber Company serves contractors and homeowners in Northern California. General contractor Jerry Ettinger of Ettinger Enterprises appreciates their reliability.
We know that when we order a truckload of lumber, it's going to be the right stuff. They're very good on their timing, on their deliveries. saves us a lot of time and money not having to run back and forth, and those things are all very important to us.
Healdsburg Lumber Company, building with you since 1875. HealdsburgLumber.com.
Cynthia Nims is joining Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KS Artle Kitchen today from her home in Seattle. Her new book is Shellfish, and what a perfect place to write a seafood book. 50 seafood recipes for shrimp, crab, mussels, clams, oysters, scallops, and lobsters. So, John, let's dive right in with Cynthia into Chapter 1, Clams.
So one of the things you point out, this isn't a recipe, but do you purge or not?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, as I said in the that little sidebar in that chapter, it's interesting to me how often that comes up still in recipes, because from, like, I have almost never purged. I've been cooking clams a lot for, you know, a few decades. And my general understanding has been that clams are purged pretty much completely by the processor before we, or the farm, you know, before we get them. Not 100%. It's not always the case, I guess, because it still comes up in a lot of recipes and descriptions. But, you know, as I mentioned too, you could test. I mean, like, steam open a couple of clams, see if there's any grit in them. A little grit now and again happens, whether you're cooking them at home or in a restaurant. But I don't know. I just have found it not to be necessary. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's another good, there's another good bumper sticker. Grit happens. I'm sorry.
I have a whole new side business coming out of this conversation.
But if you gather your own.
For sure.
I mean, up in your part of the world, you can do that. I mean, that's a rare occurrence or a never occurrence in most parts of the country. But if you do go out digging for clams, those you probably want to purge.
Yeah, I would say absolutely, because they do, you know, obviously they burrow down into the sand, and so they're living in a sandy environment. That would definitely be a time where that would be necessary.
Do you want to grab a recipe from that section?
Yeah,
that caught your eye?
Well, yes, I do. the one that I was intrigued by was the clam pizza.
Oh yeah, well, I think partly it was responding to the fact that I love pizza and you know, flatbreads in general, it was playing around. I think one of the things I was trying to do with this book in general, through all the chapters, the 50 recipes in all, is really help express how versatile shellfish are. So I had the opportunity to cover just 7 recipes per chapter, per type of shellfish. So it, you know, I can only go so far, right, with any one variety. And it just happened to be that sort of clams, you know, there's, I mean, it's certainly not a Northwest tradition, but clam pizza is not uncommon. So I was sort of just riffing off that idea. And again, exemplifying that, you know, if there's a way, a food, a preparation that you really like pizza, it's probably a place where you can play around with shellfish and work them into the mix as well.
On to mussels. And I think mussels are one of the most underutilized, delicious, and still reasonably priced, I will say, seafood out there. How do you feel, Cynthia?
Yeah, for sure. I think that, clams and mussels tend to be among the more consistently, you know, reasonable, is that's maybe not the right word, but less expensive of the shellfish. And I think it might be a little, I don't know if it's intimidation, just the cooking of them. They're not, I don't think folks are quite as enamored with mussels as clams. But I think, again, super versatile, very delicious, very, very delicious. Even, you know, again, super simply cooked like a clam. I mean, you can just steam them open, have some crusty bread and something chilled alongside. And I think they're really great. Maybe the flavor's a little stronger. So perhaps for folks who aren't the, you know, most avid seafood lovers, they might find them a little strongly flavored. I'm not sure, but because I find them delightful.
Put some cream.
There you go. Temper it a little bit with some cream. Yeah, that's a funny thing you mentioned that, John, because I realized after the fact that I don't have a lot of creamy preparations in this particular book. And it wasn't out of a sense of desire to avoid it. It's just, these recipes reflect just, I guess, the way I'm cooking these days. And I just don't often finish dishes with cream lately in my own life. So that just kind of translated into the recipe collection. Not out of, if anybody wants to add some cream to any of these, go for it.
So I don't know if you talked about it or not. What about gathering your own mussels? Because the mussels that we buy in the market, they've been farmed, most all of them, I think. Are there cautions about gathering your own?
Well, you know, John, I really don't even get into harvesting shellfish at all, really, in the book, because there are so many different regulations depending on the part of the country you're in, and the permits that are needed and the seasonality. And I feel like there's a lot. It's kind of like mushrooming. I did that with my wild mushroom book too. It's like, don't use this as a guide to go out into the forest and harvest mushrooms, because I just feel like there's it just takes care, again, knowing the local regulations and seasonality and, the right places to go to do it. So I, I know certainly it's a thing in the Northwest. We have beautiful shellfish that can be harvested. I don't get into it in the book, and I haven't honestly done a lot of that myself.
Why don't you pick a recipe from the scallop section, John? We've got about 4 or 5 chapters left, maybe one recipe.
Two things that kind of can go together. One is how to cook a scallop, when you have nice scallops to cook. I think most people overcook them. It's like, I think in yours, where you're just doing simple seared scallops, it's like 2 minutes a side or something like that, that you want the center still translucent. But the recipe I was really enchanted with were the grilled scallops. You could also sear them. With radicchio, which I thought was an interesting combination,
and a Caesar sauce, which was really wild.
Caesar sauce, I mean, I have been on. Oh gosh, I just love radicchio so much. So I've been eating a lot of it in the last few years, anyway. And I think the richness and sweetness of a scallop. This is one of those recipes where you're going for the contrasting flavors. So the slight light bitterness that you have from the that whole chicory family, radicchio and others, with that sweet scallop, it's just a nice contrast, I thought. And then it's Caesar just is so good with with all kinds of with almost anything. And so that was just playing around with a bit of richness and bitterness and the acidity of the the lemon in the dressing and it's a nice combination of things.
In the oyster section, John, you're Mr. Hog Island. Which one would you choose out of that oyster section?
Oh, well, there are a lot of those. But I want you, if you wouldn't mind, to talk about jarred oysters. Because in my association with Hog Island, I mean, they're focused on doing small oysters, extra smalls for half shell raw presentations. But are jarred oysters okay?
Sure. Yes, it's for particular preparations, basically. Jarred oysters, I'm a big, huge fan of them for cooked preparations. They're really a great option when you're doing a pan-fried oyster, classic pan-fried oyster, or a gratin of some kind, or, in any number of cooked preparations. Would not recommend, slurp. I mean, you don't slurp an oyster out of a jar, because that needs to be that pristine, just shucked experience, obviously. And as you mentioned, the Hog Island and a lot of oysters that are grown for the half shell market, those are smaller generally. And it would be, by the time you shuck one of those smaller oysters coated in a low flour and pan fry it constricts even more, and it tends to be a very small bite of oyster, which can be delightful and luxurious, but also the jarred oysters tend to be larger in size. So they're, again, ideal for a pan-fried oyster that's going to be, yeah, you know, a slightly larger knife and fork kind of presentation. And, you know, of course, they're very easy to use. You just open, yeah, the jar, and they're pristine in terms of, you know, I've been in a couple of different facilities, you know, oyster farm production areas where they're, I see them, you know, they shuck the oyster and it goes in a jar and a lid goes on. I mean, it's really, there's not a lot that goes into, yeah, it. And then they're sold locally. It's, or at least, you know, I'm lucky enough that I'm, you know, buying them in Seattle, very near where they're harvested. So it's still a very high quality product, mm-hmm, in my estimation. And I find them very versatile and delightful for just a lot of recipes.
We're just about out of time, but I want to thank you for including the anecdote about your mother in the shrimp, in the shrimp section. You wrote that you found a 1960s booklet on cooking seafood recipes, shellfish recipes, and your mother wrote, shell and devein and carry on.
Yeah,
I thought that,
yeah,
was so charming. I'm sorry we can't get to the shrimp, lobster, and crab sections. People will have to pick up the book for that.
That's right.
But I will ask you, Cynthia, would you please give us your favorite number between 1 and 12?
My favorite number between 1 and 12 is going to be 6.
Caller number 6, not lucky 7. Thank you for choosing an odd number. Caller number 6 at 636-1350 will win a copy of Shellfish, 50 Seafood Recipes for Shrimp, Crab, Mussels, Clams, Oysters, Scallops, and Lobster by Cynthia Nims from the Great Northwest. Caller number 6. Thank you so much, Cynthia.
Do we have time for restaurants?
Oh, give us your couple favorite restaurants, seafood restaurants in Seattle.
Well, a couple are, Taylor's Shellfish, which is a long-standing oyster farm family, multi-generation. They have a couple of oyster bars or a few oyster bars in Seattle, okay, which are really great, and they have menus that include other things as well. Walrus and Carpenter is one of the most celebrated oyster bars from Renee Erickson up here in Seattle, which is really delightful. And I like Rock Creek a lot as well. It's in the Fremont neighborhood. They have a variety of different seafood items that are always a delight. Those are a few, and there's so many more. I feel bad even mentioning a few, knowing how many I'm not getting to include.
Well, I'm going to hit all three of them when I come to Seattle. Cynthia, thanks so much. Thanks so much. It's been a wonderful 30 minutes chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. John Ash, we'll
yes.
be back in 10 seconds. No,
okay.
2 minutes.
Petaluma hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM, now at 96.9.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's fun to shop healthy. Your food is fresh and provided by local farmers and ranchers. These farmers offer the freshest local produce and select beef, pork, seafood, and freshly made sausages. A variety of cheese, eggs, and dairy are all at the market. March brings fresh salad greens, strawberries, avocados, and plant starts. Visit the Italian Corner for fresh pasta, gnocchi, and sauces. Shop the market's creative local artisans. There's fresh-made pastries, including gluten-free and breads that are still warm. Enjoy coffee, breakfast, or lunch from the market's variety of prepared food. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, winner of the Press Democrat's Best of Award. Open Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 p.m. at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
At Exchange Bank, giving back to the community is a part of the legacy inspired by bank co-founder Frank Doyle, a civic and philanthropic leader in Sonoma County and creator of the Doyle Trust, providing scholarships to Santa Rosa Junior College students since 1948.
Frank Doyle's community commitment instilled a culture at Exchange Bank that encourages employees to pay it forward, volunteering and showing their commitment to giving back.
Exchange Bank, stability, longevity, and commitment to service since 1890.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Well, that was a lovely conversation. She certainly is articulate and knowledgeable about seafood, isn't she? During the break, John mentioned to me that you know one of the chefs of one of the restaurants that she owns in Seattle, the Walrus and Carpenter. Mm-hmm. So who is the chef?
It's Renee Erickson. She's the chef and owner of those three outlets. And I'm sorry, I can't recall the other two, but if you go to... go to any of them, or go to Renee Erickson in Seattle, and it'll list her other, all three of the restaurants. And they're all shellfish centric.
Fabulous.
Yes. Or fish centric.
So she's worth seeking out if you're in Seattle, any of her restaurants. Yeah. Thank you for that recommendation, too. That's it for the KSRO Good Food Hour for this week. Hopefully you'll be able to stick around for At the Table with Clark Wolf and join us next week for Garden Talk and the Good Food Hour. I'm Steve Garner. Thanks for listening.